Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Squirrel Friends, the official RuPaul's Drag Race podcast. I'm Alec Moffa, and I'm actually here to introduce Lonnie Love. Lonnie, now would be a good time to just rake me over the coals. Hold my feet to the fire.
Squirrel Friends and I were wondering what happened to you last week, because it was like, I'm here by myself. I said, oh, no, he's going to come on. Yeah, the producers was like, we know. And then what happened? You never showed up.
I never showed up.
And I had to do the interview by myself, which I enjoyed. Asia was wonderful. Asia O'Hara.
I apologize. If you're listening, I apologize for missing.
Because I love
Asia O'Hara. This is my fault. And this is what happens to me. This is how I listen. And I have to get better about it. First of all, I don't have an Alex in my life. I don't have a personal assistant. I'm my own personal assistant, and that's why I'm a disaster.
You need to fire your personal assistant.
I need to fire myself. We were talking so much last week about your movie, and I got it into my head that you were filming the following week and that we had done two episodes in a row so that you could work, that you were in the clear, and that you weren't going to work until Friday. I don't know where I heard that. I don't know where I came up with that, but that's what was in my head. So at 1:30 or 1:15, one of our producers was texting me going, where are you? And I was like, oh my God!
And the producer's like, Lonnie got to do it by herself. Oh, Lord.
And then they said, Lonnie's doing fine. She's on her own. I was like, that's it. I'm fired. I'm so fired. It's going to be Squirrel Friend with Lonnie Love.
No, I missed you. And I like our back and forth. The only thing is that we didn't want to cancel because we had already set up someone here. So we don't do that. And we have each other's back.
Okay. I just want you to know that. I will be on top of it. So in case it ever happens to you, I will
night
have
before,
you covered.
I will text you the night before and say we have
I
an
asked
interview.
Our amazing producer, Jonathan. I said we've come up with a better system, and he's going to text me the day before from now on.
You know what I got this week, though, Alex?
What?
I got one of those headsets for the virtual reality.
You got an Oculus.
I've been in that for like the past 3 days.
Okay, so what I'm afraid of it, because I feel like that's the next part of the Matrix, and then we're going to be living in
the
Oculus forever.
It's going to be revolutionary.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those of you watching, it's like a headset, and the thing is that you can't see anything but whatever is in front of you, and you can do games. What I like it for is like it looks like a really big movie screen. That's what it really looks like. But you're in it. You're in it. It's like it's 360 degree videos. So you could look like you're skydiving. I've visited places in Egypt and I'm like a drone and I'm like all.
Are there virtual reality like tours? It's all kind of tours, all kind of things. Is there porn? Is there porn? That's what I was thinking.
Anything can happen in virtual reality. And actually, I think pretty soon what they're probably going to do, like instead of Zoom, they'll have us all with these headsets. So like you can be in an office, but not really in an office.
I don't want that.
I'm telling you, it's a wave of the future. It's like, it's really like, oh, and I've watched all kind of stuff. So it's great.
This is what's going to happen. This is the future. It's going to turn into a contact lens. And so you know how like kids are on their phone all the time? Now we're going to be in the Oculus all the time. It's like I'm shopping, I'm looking at porn, I'm checking the weather. That's the thing that I'm afraid of with all the new technology.
It's something new and different, and I've been in it for 3 days. So, poor James. He comes home, you still got the head. I'm like, just quiet.
Yeah. She's going to be in there forever. Speaking of new and different, we have one of the most incredible guests. Today. She's a phenomenal queen. We have Raja today. And Raja, who is such an amazing artist. I'm in awe of her work on Drag Race. Like, there's no other name for it. She created so many special moments that we kind of like, we discussed, like, I don't know where this creativity comes from. It's just next level.
So we're going to get straight to her. We're going to take a quick break, though, but we'll be right back. So, Squirrel Friends, we'll be back with Raja. Don't go anywhere.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, hello. We are back and we're so lucky to have our guest today. She's a drag race legend. Yes! You know her from winning season 3 and most recently her time on All Star 7.
Gorgeous.
All winners. Please welcome to the program the queen of She Done, Already Done, Had Hers Is, and more importantly, the only Asian winner of Drag Race. Please welcome Raja.
Yeah.
Yes,
yes.
Oh my gosh. First of all, Lonnie has to fangirl a bit and get it out of her system. You and I have met, and if we had not known each other for more than 10 years, I've known you and I'm fangirling anyway. So Lonnie, get it out of your system.
I just have to, I'm almost in tears because of the things that you have done for people and your fashion and your confidence, and I just love you, and I just watching you has just inspired me. So, and we'll get through this in the interview and you'll know why I'm over here bubbling and crying. Okay. But the things
Lonnie,
that you've done have just been inspiring. So thank you so much.
And you know what, Lonnie, your reaction is this was one of the first things I wanted to talk to Raja about, is the fandom for Raja is super emotional.
Yes.
It's not a passive thing like, oh, Raja. Like, people have very strong opinions in the Raja-dom. I don't know what you refer to your fans as, your raw fans or the queendom that you have. Why do you think that is?
You mean the entourage?
Yeah, the entourage. That people have very strong feelings about the art that you... Well, I'll tell you what I think, but I want to hear what you think.
I think it's, you know, I was on Drag Race a long time ago, mm-hmm. 12 years ago, almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 12 years ago. And so I probably was the introduction to a style of drag that might have been seemingly irreverent. Mm-hmm. And I introduced an idea of drag that had a different type of visual feeling to it. I really enjoy style and fashion and references. I love historical reference. I love, And so I think that part seems quite unique to many people, and I do think about it a lot, and oftentimes I don't ever think it's such a big deal, but when I see people's reaction to it, especially being on All Stars and seeing the reactions of the other queens, it is quite moving, and oftentimes I have the same reaction that Lonnie has about my experience, because I just never would have thought that what I do would have affected people in that way. Or so, you know,
yeah,
I kind of get it. Yeah, I do.
It does. Where are you now? Are you on tour? What's happening?
I'm at home now. I'm enjoying being at home. Mm-hmm. I am just doing all the, you know, doing all the stuff that I can do at home. I've been doing some traveling here and there, but mostly I'm just kind of conceptualizing different ideas of what I want to do in the next year and see what the next steps are in my future, because I feel like now there's a whole resurgence of fans and I don't want to disappoint, and I really want to provide something, but I really want to be thoughtful about it.
That's what we love about you. That's, you put thought in what you do. And so that's my question, is what made you want to do All Star 7?
Well, because I, you know, as any drag queen is, I'm an attention whore. I love being on TV, and I love it. I love it. You know, and I wanted another chance at it. I'd watched so many of my sisters get to be on Drag Race All Stars because they never won. So, you know, and I was always sort of envious of that, because they were able to, you know, they had their fan base increased, they got a lot more opportunities, and I felt like I needed some of that. Why shouldn't I? I'm not done. Yeah. Like, why? Just because I'm a winner, I can't be seen again. So I, you know, I hesitated about it only for a few minutes because we had just gotten out of COVID. And I was like, am I too fat to go back on TV?
Oh,
people remember me as being this, like, you know, live thing on, you know, but I don't know. I had all my insecurities really started to kind
of. Oh, of course. Of course.
They just came for me and beat me up only for a few minutes. And then I was like, but you get to be on TV again. You get to show them a whole other side. You get to see the growth that a person, that an artist can have in 11 years, and also the wealth of wisdom that has come along with that time. So, you know, there was no other way around it. And who knew, you know, I didn't know if they were ever going to do a season like this, which I think they won't, but.
It's the best season ever. It was hands down the best season that's ever been. And I felt like watching you on season, you mentioned, you know, your wisdom. And I think that's, there's a lot of ageism in this community and especially in the drag community with a lot of drag queens thinking, well, you can just put yourself on Instagram and call yourself a drag queen. And that doesn't necessarily translate into a great contestant. And I used to tag you in the, on the Instagram as this is the Raja Renaissance, because it was like a great rediscovery of your skill set and your looks. Week after week, it was kind of like you won week after week from the Louis Couture's to the Vivian Westwood to the gold. I mean, we'll get into it, but can you let us in on a little bit of, okay, you hear that you're going to go on.
Right.
You say yes. Mm-hmm. What are the next steps in assembling your looks and coming up with the ideas?
Well, because we had just gone through the pandemic, I spent most of my time really creating. You know, I had all this time at home, and one of my favorite things to do is to just create things to wear. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't always know what the event is going to be, but I just started making stuff. So by the time they invited us, I had already had about five outfits going and ready.
Oh, really?
Ready for, yeah. And, wow. and I had no clue that I was going to eventually be back on All Stars. So I had already started.
What were the five outfits that were ready? What were the five pandemic outfits that you came up with?
The entrance look was one of them.
The entrance look where you were the eye, instead of wearing the eye hat, you were the eye.
Right. And then the reveals look that had all the psychedelic florals. I'd been already working on that. They were really just remnants and pieces of things, costumes that, you know, it was really just kind of me upcycling things that were already in my apartment. And and eventually I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. This will go well for this. And this will go well for this. And in a lot of ways, I was already kind of preparing something. And I remember when I was a makeup artist, and I was like in between gigs, and I didn't have any money coming in, or no one was calling me. I would go to my makeup kit and I would spend time cleaning it. I would go and make sure that all the palettes were clean, that all the brushes were ready to go. And I was always mindful of that, because, you know, if you don't put the love into the work and the tools that you use, then what are you really doing? And inevitably, every time, you know, in these times, I would go and touch my kit and clean it all out and prepare it for a gig, all of a sudden phone calls would come immediately.
Isn't that amazing?
It was just a manifestation, you know, and that's something that I truly, truly believe in. It's like, you know, if nothing's going on in your life, focus all of your attention into the things that you love, and eventually something comes up, including a phone call from World of Wonder saying, hey, do you want to go back on TV? And I was like, hell yeah, I'm ready to go. So,
I love that.
You get there and you see all the other contestants, and they're a little younger, but you handled it like a true queen.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I walked in, I was so nervous. I could barely stand as I'm waiting for the countdown to walk in through the workroom. I was just standing behind that wall, and I could hear everyone talking, and I was like, oh my gosh, am I even ready for this? And as soon as I walked in, the reaction from the rest of the group was so warm, so welcoming, with so much reverence. And everyone was just like bowing down.
Respect
and love. And it was like, you know, everyone just sharing stories about how they were either in high school or in college when they first encountered me and saw me on TV, and how much I had changed their perception of what drag could be. And it was really quite moving because that's not the expectation I had. I thought it was just going to be a cunt fest, you know, and everyone was going to be bitchy.
It's
going
to be horrible. There was something that you were doing during this season that was different from your first season. And I felt like you incorporated it a lot into what you did, where you were coming from a very spiritual place. Like, I felt like before, in the past 11 years, you'd been doing a lot of inner work or spiritual work, and you talked a lot about it during the season. Can you speak to us a little bit about that experience, about what's been happening in the past 10 years that made you come back as, like, even more ferocious and even more colorful and even more creative?
Yeah. Well, in the 10 years or 11 years that I hadn't been back on television, I have a lot of time to think about what it is that I do. And, you know, as entertainers, as comedians and actors that you are, it's like, you know, you're always wondering, like, oh, you know, what am I doing? How do I stay relevant? How do I stay visible? Am I even there? Do people even notice me anymore? You know, and then you have to step back and say, why am I doing this? You know, why? Why do I do this? Why? What is it that I love about it? And I've always felt that drag for me wasn't, you know, it was never a separate character for me. I'd never, you know, like, there's Varla Jean and then there's Jeff, you know what I mean? Like, there's characters, like a character in drag. And I realized that there was never really any separation to it, and that it did take on a spiritual kind of thing for me. The reason why I do it was very ritualistic. There was something about it. You know, Native Americans call it two-spirit. You know, a lot of cultures have it. Oh. But I discovered that that's who I am. And so my drag never really was a separate character. It was just a manifestation. It was another part of me that was not separate. It was the same person. There's no difference, no change in the two entities, the two deities. It was all one solid unit. And I think that's how I came to that place, you know?
You're connected to your spirit. I feel like Oprah talks about, like, people never really kind of examine why they're doing something.
Right.
The purpose behind it. And it sounds like you've given a lot of thought to why. And when you said that when you started touching your makeup and everything, and then something would happen, that almost sounds like an inner guidance. I, you know, I'm Filipino and I grew up in California, so I'm all about the woo-woo. So it almost sounds like your creativity is, I mean, because my philosophy is, you guys, and I want to know your thoughts on this, Lonnie, is that all children are artists. We all start because we're all, when little children, we're in touch with our spirit. Because nobody's taught you how to be embarrassed or ashamed yet. So all children dance, sing, play, and act. And when we get older and we stop doing those things, we need artists to reconnect us to our spirit because we're not doing that anymore.
Well, that's what I got when I was watching Raja on All Stars. I felt that there, it's like every week, and I know you felt it, and I know our squirrel friends, because they just kept talking and commenting about it. You were trending every week. The outfits, you know, even, can we talk about Snatch Game? Because as a comedian, that was genius. I mean, how did you come up with Madam playing that?
Thank you.
And I feel like also that was the acme of your reinvention. It was like, that's okay, fuck it. She can do everything. You were Madam and Diana Vreeland. And where did that come from?
Well, obsessions first. You know, Diana Vreeland, I can watch The Eye Has to Travel. I've watched that documentary millions of times just for the sound bites and for the visuals of it. Diana Vreeland is a very important character, controversial character, loved her. And I just, you know, I love eccentric old women, which is what I'm am and becoming or whatever. And
Diana Vreeland was an avatar. She predicted the future. She was the one who discovered Iman and thrust her forward. I mean, she kind of fucked with people's ideas, standards of beauty and what was beautiful through her lens. So I love that you brought her up for the kids to reexamine.
I mean, she introduced the concept of wearing blue jeans as fashion. You know, so this is a very, very influential person. And so I was like, well, you know, people know me as being this fashion person, fashion queen, whatever. So let's teach them a little bit. That's another responsibility I had. I felt like I had to educate, which brought me to the concept of Madam. I mean, like, it was definitely one of those, like, the edibles kicked in at home and I was like, yo, Madam, let's do Madam. And that took me back to, you know, coming to the States for the first time in 1984. I was 9 years old, watching Solid Gold and seeing the interaction either between Dionne Warwick or Marilyn McCoo. Madam was always there, Waylon doing the jokes, and Madam was such a big, profound, you know, over the top camp character, a puppetry, which I had always been obsessed with. I mean, I always think that puppetry was what introduced me to drag, you know, and so another educating moment. And to talk about Waylon and how we lost people like Waylon, thousands, millions, I don't know. There was, you know, I'm from that generation of who remembers people dying of AIDS.
Me too.
And so that had to be talked about. But the journey to finding Madam was a really interesting one, because I had to Google the estate. Like, I was like, who owns this trademark? Because technically on Drag Race, you're not allowed to do cartoon characters. Like, you can't be Minnie Mouse or Ursula. None of that, you know? So I had to research.
Snagglepuss
Ooh, Snagglepuss. Uh-huh.
Snagglepuss would have been a good one. Exit stage right, stage left even.
So yeah, I went and researched it. I Googled it, found out. And it turns out that there were two different people who owned the trademark. And one of them being a hotel owner in Provincetown that I was familiar with. So it all just kind of happened. I got the paperwork filled out, a very loose NDA to tell them like I'm doing something, but couldn't tell them exactly what.
Right.
But I got the permission from the people who owned the copyright, the trademark. They owned it, and I got the permission, the signature, and that's how it all came to be.
But you had the jokes. Like, you had jokes for both of them. Yeah, like when you came up with bodega, we went around our house for weeks going bodega. I would like a sandwich myself, and I would buy it at a bodega. You mentioned Provincetown. I want to talk about, because Lonnie, you'll appreciate this story. This is my one and only Waylon Flowers and Madam story. Waylon did pass away from AIDS. We lost him, and I met him right before he died. I was in Provincetown, a young comic in the 80s. I was terrified of everybody. I was invited to a party someplace, and there was somebody holding court at this party. And everybody was gathered around this person, and they were laughing like there was somebody telling a story. And everybody gathered around the living room, and I was like, what the hell is going on in there? And I walked in, and it was Madam holding court like she was a guest at the party.
Love it.
Gossiping and talking to everybody like a real person. And there was no separation between Waylon and Madam. It was like one entity. It was supernatural. Wow. It was just like, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And I thought about like adding the sticks to the arms.
Right.
You know, all the little sight gags to say puppet, you know, and all those things again, just stoner ideas. I was like, yeah, if I'm going to do this, I am not going to mess this up. I got to do each of these as accurately and as visually like stimulating as possible.
What was your two favorite outfits for All-Stars?
I would say the laser costume and the light challenge.
Okay.
You know, it was the most, it wasn't an easy costume to wear. I'm walking slow.
No, I was like, why are you even, you're not even wearing shoes. Like, your feet are in these rectangular boxes. Like, I was watching that. Do you know what it is about you? It's like every time you walk out in the runway is you do the thing that the show needs, which is you reinvent it. It's like, I don't recognize anything that you do. I recognize the references.
Yeah.
And where you're coming from, you know, like the Vivian Westwood rock and roll outfit, the teal with the red and the strap sandals and the Louis Couture's at the very beginning. Like, so you like the light up outfit, and then was the gold one of your favorites? The gold one with the headpiece?
Let Raja pick.
Okay, let Raja pick. Okay, I'm too excited. Raja, you pick.
There was quite a few that I enjoyed wearing. I really liked the Louis XIV one, because that's quintessential. That's a very quintessential, like, Raja, the Gemini part of me. Like, the idea was crowned queen. And I'm like, how do I spin this? How do I make it not... How do I make it not predictable? Everyone's going to be looking like a queen of some sort. And I'm like, well, Raja means king. So why not play with the male-female idea and go for Louis XIV, who was the biggest fucking Nelly of her time? Mm. You know, she introduced high heels for men and wigs. And so I was like, let me play with that. And again, I love historical references. So why not do something that's exaggerated? And so to me, that's a very quintessential, like, me in concept, because if somebody tells me to do it one way,
right,
I'm going to try to figure out how to invent another way to do it, but you're still going to get what you asked me for, but not how you asked for it. You know, you're not going to get exactly what you asked from me ever. You're going to get my version of it. So
ask for a zig, we're going to get a zag.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. I'm yammering on about the gold thing because that blew my mind. I don't know if it's one of your favorites or not, but the gold mesh outfit with the bracelets.
Oh.
I believe.
Please say you remember.
Is that
it.
An Abraham Levy outfit?
It started out as an Abraham. And then, of course, I had to consult Abraham because he's a real dear friend of mine. I'm like, okay, I have this outfit that I'm working and I'm incorporating some of your pieces. Please help me add to it. You know, I had my drag daughter who's an expert at everything. I mean, this kid is a milliner, sews. Also loves knitting and crocheting. So I was like, let's crochet and knit gold rope. So we got about 7 different types of gold rope.
Wow.
And then, you know, and we just pieced it together. And then, you know, it was a team effort. Mm-hmm. Everyone came in to help, the rhinestoning, everything, Abraham, you know, and it's just, it was collaborative. And that's the way I usually like to work. So.
And the faceplate.
That was a fun one to
was
wear.
The faceplate your idea? The faceplate was just kind of knocked me out. The faceplate. I was just kind of like, what is she doing?
The faceplate? What was the faceplate?
You had a gold almost thing on your face that crisscrossed. I'm like that kid at the Star Trek convention. Like, remember the episode when you went to the planet and then that happened? Like, it was the gold. It was the gold face covering that was just unbelievable.
Oh, right. Yeah. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
And that one in particular was an homage to Delight, you know, and Mugler.
Okay.
You know, growing up as a gay kid in the early 90s, Delight, Madonna, those were my icons. Those were the people I wanted to look like. My first wig that I ever bought was a stolen one from Hollywood Wigs. Wow. And it was a bright auburn bob with a flip. And I mopped that shit from Hollywood Wigs on Hollywood and Vine. That store no longer exists.
Yeah,
I was like
16
Hollywood
years
old. But
Hollywood Wig and costume still exists.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was just a nod to that time.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your experience and how you mixed your Asian heritage into your drag.
That knocked me out. That's the part that makes me cry, is like you really incorporated your Indonesian-ness into it.
Yeah. I think that was the opportunity for me to really kind of showcase the fact that I am the only, as of now, the only Asian-American winner of the franchise. So I was like, okay, now I'm going back. I didn't get to talk about it the first time. Most people didn't even know that I was Asian. You know, I think a lot of people, I don't know what people assumed that I was. I would always see online people saying, ooh, Kim Chi would have been a great first winner or, you know, whatever. But I was like, wait, what about me?
Wait, about me.
I'm actually,
I'm actually from
what about
there?
My needs?
Right.
Yeah. So when preparing for this, I was like, now's the time. Now's the time to really talk about that, to showcase it, to talk about how important my heritage is, and also as a sort of love letter to my family, you know.
Yeah, right.
That was very important because I wanted to represent. I wanted them to see, you know, that I was proud of my heritage. So,
and you did in that story, especially in the story about you told about you being a kid and them losing you at the airport. And when they found you, you were dancing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that to me is like the epitome of children being in touch with their spirit. Yes. And like, this is the spirit that has like followed you through your whole, like, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. Was that part of your decision to do a traditional dance?
It was. And I think the most profound thing, I did share on Instagram a short video of myself rehearsing and getting some coaching from my mother, who had spent most of her young adult life and her youth as an Indonesian dancer studying under Debbie Ja, who was like the Pavlova of Indonesian dance of the time. She was in film in like the 30s and the 40s here in Hollywood. So, you know, I had to get some coaching from her because she knew about these dances more than anyone else. And my mom was very, very ill at the time.
Oh.
And eventually she passed away in November and never got to see me on Drag Race. So it was very important. It was important for me to share this moment with her because there was something inside of me that said, you know what, this is the last chance for me to do this. Mm. It was on my birthday. My family had prepared a meal for me and we'd all come over. And I was like, okay, Mom, I'm going to show you what I'm doing. And then she literally coached me for the whole thing. She's like, no, elbows up, bigger eyes.
Oh.
I need you to shake your shoulders a little harder. no, that's a little, you got, you know, a little stronger here, a little push there. And, you know, through her weakness and her illness, she was able to like help me through it. And my whole family sat in the den and watched me do it. And it was just, it was profound. It was like oh my God, now I'm going to cry. Shit. Oh my God. Yeah.
making me cry.
Because it's like, what a great way to honor her and to kind of like bring her presence into Drag Race.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, it will last forever.
Forever.
Like, this is something that will be forever. So she lives on.
Yeah, it's part of her legacy to you. It's just like, so you have a podcast of your own that we need to talk about. Tell us about it.
It's called Very That. It's starring myself and Delta Work. And it's done through the Mom Podcast, which is, you know, there's a lot of podcasts through that group. And I especially enjoy it because I think actually you, Alec, were the first person to introduce me to doing podcasts. You were the first person to invite me when you were doing it with Rachel True.
Good for something.
Yeah. Okay.
I caught the bug. I caught it through Alec. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many people have said that before. But
it's my fault. To get in line. It forms to the left.
But I absolutely love doing it. I just, you know, and this is done with Delta, who's a friend of mine for, you know, over 20 years.
For so long.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just, I think our chemistry translates through it. We talk about all things. We talk about beauty. We talk about our history together. We talk about nightclubs. We just talk about everything. And it's one of my favorite things to do because it's a chance for me to get to connect with Delta because our schedules are so busy that we actually get to take time out, sit down, talk to each other, talk about topics. And people seem to really enjoy it. Everywhere I travel, people are like, oh my gosh, Very That. You know, and I'm like, wow, people actually do listen to this stuff. I just thought I was talking to my friend.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
that's how this feels most of the time. So if anybody says they listen to it, I'm like, what?
Wow. Exactly.
So I think that I had a question here talking about your superhero power. I know what it is. We always ask people because I always feel like drag is like an alternate identity for the super. It's like Clark Kent turns into Superman. And what do you feel is your superpower in drag?
Wow, that's a tough one. Yeah. It's you know what? It's maybe the unapologetic unbotheredness of it. Is that a superpower? I think that's a superpower.
That if you test yourself and you're not, I mean, it sounds like the unbotheredness, it's kind of like, Lonnie, do you ever feel like before you go on stage, I don't give a fuck how they react.
Your mental is so good, Raja. Yeah. Your mental, and it's you can tell that you've been working on your spirituality, that you've been working on the confidence, and we feel it as fans.
Yeah.
So I think that is your superpower.
You know, one of the things I learned from working on America's Next Top Model through Tyra Banks was the concept of you got to fake it to make it. And, you know, as entertainers, you got to psych yourself up.
Right.
You got to fake it a little bit. And even when you're not feeling it, you just be like, it's good. You know, I am confident. I am ready. This is it. You know, they're going to believe it if I believe it, you know?
I love that.
And that's how it works with the things that I wear. It's like, if you don't understand it, that's not my problem. It's like, it really isn't because I'm feeling joyful all up in this outfit. So, you know what? You figure it out. It's not my problem.
That's right. Well, we love you.
This is the Oprah masterclass and where I want this to go on forever because, and before we wrap it up, this is my takeaway from you today.
What is it?
Alignment. Mm-hmm. Like we come up with these crazy ideas and we either say yes to them, like, I'm going to give that a try. Or you touch the makeup and you come up with the idea and you keep saying yes to it so that you're in alignment. You're just receiving the message and then delivering it. And I think that's what great art does. I mean, Lonnie, you've had moments on stage where it's like, I don't know where that came from. It came. It just happens in the moment. And you say it, and that's just the magical thing about you.
I mean, and that's what we as entertainers do. I thoroughly have enjoyed you, Raja, and I will keep following you. And where can our squirrel friends find you on socials?
Mostly on Instagram, at Sutan Amrol is, you know, how people find me usually. And, you know, my handle, is that what they call it? My handle on Instagram is Sutan Amrol, which is my birth name. The reason for that is because I believe that the mind that creates Raja is Sutan's. And so I've never changed it. And I figure people will figure it out. They'll find me at Sutan Amrol, Sutan Amrol.
Oh my gosh. I just, I love, so we love talking to you, and on behalf of all the squirrel friends everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We bow down.
I love you.
Good for something. You are good for something, Alec.
Love you. You're so inspirational.
One of my favorite things about doing what I do is being in the tribe of people, of talented people. You know, I mean, I'm not mm-hmm. sure when this is going to air, but soon enough, we'll be announcing a tour that I'm doing next summer.
Yay!
So I'm going to be hitting both of you up for some coaching and for some help. Okay. My beautiful comedic acting tribe people.
Yes. Count me in. Mm-hmm. Count me in.
Uh-huh. Help me out. So.
All right.
And before we go, we have to settle the debate. Since you wanted it so badly, was the platinum plunger gold or platinum?
Neither. It was like cheap ass silver glitter from Michael's. Neither.
We love that part. That was a great bit.
I love that.
Thank you so much, Raja, for your time. Squirrel friends, we appreciate it. Please send Raja some love, squirrel friends, and you've just been great, and continued success.
I love you guys.
We love you.
I love you. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh my God, that was like an Oprah masterclass, wasn't it? When she said that she said nothing's going on and she started doing her, touching her makeup.
Her makeup.
My version of that is when nothing's going on, I have to perform. Like for me, stand-up is like the way to keep my creativity going. Mm-hmm. Like even if I'm not working, I can still perform live anytime I want. And that kind of keeps me... my creative juices flowing.
You know, it's what we say, what I got from her story was stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
That's right.
And so that's what, like, when you think that you have downtime, when you think that nothing is going on, you know, when there's change happening in your life, do something.
Get ready.
And because that way you don't have to get ready. Just stay ready. And that's what she was doing. And she's fantastic. Just so many great stories. So much. This is the reason why, Squirrel Friends, you have to listen to us, because we get the inside scoop. Mm-hmm. We get the behind the scenes stories, the reason for, you know, certain things.
Right.
When you listen to Squirrel Friends, and I'm just so happy to talk to her, and I got emotional, and I'm getting emotional now because she's
I
just
love
lovely.
When you get emotional, Lana. You're so vulnerable, which is why you're going to be so great in this movie.
You're very
emotionally in touch with who you are. Now, and this is also, you know, what Raja said is like, she thinks about why we do what we do.
Yes.
And I do this podcast because I love drag.
Yes.
I love hanging out with you.
I love the community.
I want to lift these queens up. So remember to tip your queens. Show them love on all social media. You know what? Social media, you have a power to either ruin or lift up somebody's day.
That's right.
I swear to God, if you go on social media and you lift up somebody's day and you make it a habit, it's only a matter of time before all of that good love comes back to you.
Where can they send you some love?
They can send me love. Me and my 35,000 followers. It's going up and up each week, Lonnie. I kid you not. You can find me at Instagram, at Twitter. I answer all DMs. We'll read your DMs on the air. Where can we find you, Lonnie Love?
At Lonnie Love. And on Instagram, at Comic Lonnie Love. And also, Lonnie Love 7 on TikTok. I'm starting to do the TikTok kids.
How many followers? On Instagram, she has 1.7 million followers.
I worked really hard, and I'm trying to work hard on my TikTok followers. So you didn't, I'm like 50,000.
You didn't purchase those in Beijing or something through some algorithm.
Nope, that was pure.
Lonnie Love, she's the real thing. You can listen to Squirrel Friends, the official RuPaul's Drag Race podcast, on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you like this episode, make sure to rate and review us 5 stars, please, and tell a friend.
Yeah, and tell me when the show's on and when it records so I can actually show up. You can catch up on past episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race and All Stars on Paramount+.
see you soon.
We'll see you soon. Good luck.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.